This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, November 5th, 2010. I'm Kyle Kellums. In the new book, Unhealthy Cities, Poverty, Race, and Place in America, authors Kevin Fitzpatrick and Mark Ligori write that place matters. A simple statement, sure, but the writers examine the complex relationship between place, region, cities, neighborhoods, and health and well-being of the place's residents. Kevin Fitzpatrick, a co-author of the book, is professor and Jones Chair in Community in the Department of Sociology at the University of Arkansas. Tomorrow afternoon at 3:30, he'll discuss and read from Unhealthy Cities at Nightbird Books on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. This morning, he came to the Carver Center for Public Radio to discuss the book and the importance of place.
In fact, I think it's more than just physical health. It's all of well-being that gets wrapped up into that. So we try and look at the landscape of work that's been done, focus on a few cities to provide us with some background to the idea of the link between neighborhood and health, and then try and tell this story that links with the different elements of place and the myriad of health issues that are related to that. And whether it's the history of brownfields or the story of lead paint in old decaying neighborhoods, regardless, they all have a significant impact on people, but not in a way that it's the same for everyone. The story that we try and develop is really about how disadvantaged neighborhoods impact people differently, and particularly disadvantaged populations. So really the book focuses on homeless and children and elderly and low-income minorities, all those groups that tend to be place-bound. The groups that don't have these social economic groups that don't have the opportunity to move at will, but rather they're often tied to their place. And it's those groups as well as others that are at greatest risk.
And it is a perpetual cycle?
Pretty much. I think that one of the important things about the book is that we have to tell some good stories. Can't just tell, this is how bad it is, look at this, terrible. There are some great stories. In fact, there are some success stories that show how one person, one group, gets behind an idea and can break that cycle. Break the cycle of unhealthiness, break the cycle of poverty and how it's related to that unhealthiness. And there are some great examples and great illustrations about communities, about schools, about churches across the country that sort of put their foot down and say, we got to do something for our kids, we got to do something for our families, we got to do something for this community or it's just going to disappear.
Those examples, those good stories, do they generally originate inside the unhealthy places? I mean, it has to be someone that's there.
Yeah, it's sort of a bubble up, sometimes grassroots, sometimes not. But there's a story in here that actually we heard for the first time in, not to overplug NPR, but we heard it in Bill Moyer's on his show. And it's about a physician who helps develop sort of a grassroots movement of essentially mothers in a neighborhood in Santa Ana, California, which happens to be a neighborhood, city neighborhood, right next to Disney World and some of the wealthiest commercial real estate in the entire country. And this Santa Ana, California neighborhood is in dire straits. And she begins to develop this grassroots movement that improves green space where there was none, improves health and nutrition and eating habits where there were a few, tries to bring in fresh produce and really just kind of begins to radically change the shape of the neighborhood. She's a physician. She understands risk related to obesity and poor nutrition and other kinds of things as it relates to kids. And so, you know, we really have to do something about the neighborhood to improve the future of this generation, and kind of single-handedly takes it on and does an incredible job, sort of fights City Hall in the process, and does an incredible job, again, of just mobilizing local people. I think it ends up being more important that if you have a stake in it, your investment and the way at which you work and want to change things is phenomenal, and I think that Santa Ana story is a great example.
You mentioned diet, access to good, nutritious food. The geographic location and closeness, that's a big issue.
Food deserts.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they are. I mean, many of these unhealthy neighborhoods are literally food deserts where the closest thing that kids can walk to get something to eat is a convenience store. Beef jerky and ding dongs, and there's no fresh produce within a mile or two radius of these. Even produce that's at a neighborhood market type of store, because it's mostly liquor stores, convenience stores, gas stations, those kinds of things. And every neighborhood. Probably. There's one of those neighborhoods in every place that we go. We can find them. And the options of unhealthy diet have an enormous impact on so many other things. So that if kids don't have access to it, families don't have access to it, then, you know, it's going to create an enormous amount of health problems, not just among those kids, but for the family as a whole. But yeah, food deserts. It's not a word that we use in the book, but it's a word that I wish we would have used in the book.
Is there an out-of-sight, out-of-mind sort of problem here? I think back a few years ago when I was in Vancouver, which is always topping international lists of one of the most livable, most mm-hmm. happy cities. And I was always told during this nearly week-long stay, don't go to this one area of Vancouver. Whatever you do, mm-hmm. everything else is beautiful. I took a wrong turn because I'm directionally challenged. Ended up in this really horrible part of Vancouver. It's about 6-7 blocks long. And then when I went back to the hotel, most of the people who lived in Vancouver who worked there told me they'd never been there, had never seen it, had only heard about it. Mm. So is it harder to help places that you've never been and you make yourself ignorant of?
Yeah. I think that part of the drive to write this is to make sure that the story keeps getting told. Because I do think that for many people, and our example of the neighborhood in Birmingham that we kind of write the story around is a perfect one, because it is, again, one of those neighborhoods that maybe is off the beaten path. Predominantly low income, predominantly minority, not a lot of services, not a lot of accessibility. And I think that that's probably true, and I think that there's probably one or two or 20 in most big cities across the world, not just America, even though we focus on just U.S. But I also think that even in a place like Northwest Arkansas, there are unhealthy neighborhoods, and they're made unhealthy by their location, by their housing, by the traffic patterns, by the lack of good food and access to good food. And so I think that and maybe high crime or high risk of crime, and when you look at all of these social indicators, it stacks up as a place that's unhealthy. You know, and there are some people that argue that some cities are designed in such a way, or some neighborhoods within cities are designed in such a way, is to just be sick neighborhoods, sick because of their actual design, their location, the overall structure within those neighborhoods. A lot of sick neighborhoods around the country, and it's predominantly historical.
So what will it take to change some of those? Will it take money, political will, social will?
All of those. And I think that, again, it goes back to the earlier point about recognition. It's important that much like, you know, we've had conversations about homeless and all of those social ills that we sometimes forget. I think that it's important that we continue to remind people that we live, for example, in Northwest Arkansas. We live in a very healthy region. But when you look at some of the risk factors and some of the sort of smaller units, maybe neighborhoods within a larger neighborhood or neighborhoods next to a rundown factory and those kinds of places. Those, are, I think, are the places that we forget about. I mean, you know, we look at the enormous philanthropy and we look at it, you know, the health indicators relative to the rest of the state and saying, wow, everybody ought to be living in Northwest Arkansas. But that doesn't exclude the fact that if you drive around and in some of the city locations from South Fayetteville all the way to North Bentonville, you can find those kinds of neighborhoods that have health indicators that suggest that, you know, it's a sick neighborhood and there are a lot of folks at risk. So I think it's about keeping that in focus for people, reminding them constantly that there are issues that can be combated, sometimes in a bubble-up grassroots way, but other times, you know, we just need to be able to put money and program to work in order to change that.
Kevin Fitzpatrick is co-author, along with Mark Ligori of Birmingham, Alabama, of the new book, Unhealthy Cities, Poverty, Race, and Place in America. He's also professor and Jones Chair in Community in the Department of Sociology at the University of Arkansas. Tomorrow afternoon at 3:30, he'll read from and discuss the book at Nightbird Books on Dixon Street in downtown Fayetteville. West Memphis 3 will receive new hearings. That ruling from the Arkansas State Supreme Court was delivered yesterday. And from Little Rock, Kelly McNeil of KUAR has this report.
Damian Eccles, Jesse Miskelly, and Jason Baldwin were convicted as teens in the brutal slaying of three small boys. Eccles' wife, Lori Davis, was elated by Thursday's ruling. She and her husband believe that now the state might as well skip the evidentiary hearing and proceed straight to a new trial.
A new trial is what we've been fighting for all these years, because he knows when he goes into a courtroom this time that he will prove his innocence. So it will prove the innocence of Jason and Jesse.
The state had argued that additional evidence, including newly analyzed DNA and new testimony, shouldn't be considered by a judge in deciding whether to grant a new trial. Activist Cappy Peck says the Supreme Court was right in ordering a hearing.
This states all of the evidence should be presented and heard. All means all. And the AG's office tried to restrict this, and they failed. And that is a victory for us and for any falsely accused person.
The case has galvanized activists from across the country who believe the three men are innocent. The Attorney General's office says it respects the Supreme Court's decision, but intends to fulfill its responsibility to defend the jury verdicts.
That report from Kelly McNeil of KUAR in Little Rock. Speaking of Little Rock, there will be changes in the capital city come January. Republicans made significant gains in both chambers of the state legislature in this week's elections. When the Arkansas House convenes in January, 45 of its 100 members will be Republicans. That's the largest GOP voting bloc since Reconstruction. Incoming House Speaker Robert Moore says the change means it will be virtually impossible, he says, to pass legislation like the recent increase in the severance tax on natural gas and a hike on cigarette taxes to fund a statewide trauma system.
As we sit here and speak right now, I don't know of any effort to raise taxes. If it does become an issue, certainly we have to, in most instances, have to have 3/4 of our membership vote to raise taxes. It was tough before, and it'd probably be tougher this time, no doubt about it.
Speaker Moore, a Democrat from Arkansas City, says he was elected Speaker with the support of the House Republican Caucus and so plans to put many of its members into leadership positions when the committee chairmanships are selected today at the Capitol. Ahead on Ozarks at Large, a jazz master is coming to Northwest Arkansas this weekend, and free hugs are being handed out even as I speak around Fayetteville. Details ahead on Ozarks at Large. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Becca Bacon-Martin, editor of What's Up, the entertainment tab found in today's editions of Northwest Arkansas newspapers. Welcome back.
And you know, there's a reason why I love Northwest Arkansas, proven this week in What's Up.
Because there's a wide variety of things to do.
We have stories about the music of Glee coming to Northwest Arkansas Community College, a national touring production of Spring Awakening at the Walton Arts Center, a classically odd comedy at Rogers Little Theater, and something called Pretty Things Peep Show at the Smoke and Barrel Tavern in Fayetteville. As Kevin Kinder, our reporter, said, we kind of sexed things up this week. But it's got to qualify as something for everybody.
Well, what do you want to start with?
Let's start with Glee.
Okay,
you know the Flying Tomato Cabaret.
It's at Northwest Arkansas Community College where kids sing for their dinner.
In their 16th year doing this. This year they've adopted something that's much newer and much more popular, Glee.
The show on Fox Television about kids who sing.
2 gold albums, more than 10 million song downloads. 19 Emmy nominations. And they sell the arrangements. So if you happen to be the choir at Northwest Arkansas Community College, or in this case, the jazz ensemble is joining them for the first time this year, you can buy the arrangements from Glee, and that's exactly what they've done. So this year it will be the Twain Meeting.
There you go.
Proceeds go to the kids' travel. This year in the spring, they'll go to a week of master classes and concerts and Broadway shows in New York. So you get spaghetti.
Always good.
You get the chamber singers.
Always good.
You get the jazz ensemble.
Uh-huh.
You get a good cause.
Right.
And you get to do this at 7 o'clock today through Sunday, and again November 12th through 14th at Northwest Arkansas Community College. It's $18 for all of that. And you should make reservations at 619-2237 because they sell out fast every year.
So that's one of the things in the Something for Everybody mix.
And then there's one of the sexy parts.
Okay.
Spring Awakening.
Yes.
Coming to the Walton Arts Center. And again, Kevin wrote this story and he didn't pull any punches. He said, it's about sex and sexual abuse and abortion and teenage angst. And here's the local connection to Spring Awakening. Stephen Sater, the playwright, came to the Mount Sequoia New Play Retreat 20 years ago. 15 years ago.
15, I think, yes.
If you haven't been here that long, there was a month-long summer retreat at Mount Sequoia in Fayetteville where new and upcoming playwrights came and worked on
Works in progress. They would stage them in the living room of a lodge or something every day or so, and then get critiques from the actors, from the University of Arkansas professors, from the professionals, go back, work more, come the next day and show what they had done.
Roger Gross was involved in this. Kent Brown was involved in this. Tom Jones, not the singer, the former UA professor, was involved in this. And Stephen Sater was one of the playwrights. So we have our own little local connection to Spring Awakening. It's based on a 19th century play, which I didn't know, and is really about kids growing up and finding out about sex, and it's a musical, sex, suicide, and music, recommended for mature audiences.
I believe Walton Arts Center on their website has kind of a guideline. Should I take my son or daughter, niece or nephew?
Yes.
Here are the facts. You decide.
Yes. And it's a good thing to think through because you don't want to go and find out, you know, when you've paid $39 or $49 for a ticket. So anyway, the show is 8 o'clock Thursday and 8 o'clock next Friday, November 12th. You can find out more at 443-5600.
Right.
And then there's The Odd Couple.
Neil Simon to my knowledge, never has visited Northwest Arkansas.
No. But he did write a great play about a slob and a neatnik and all the things that happened to them. And unless you've been living under a rock on Guam for 45 years, you've probably seen this show. Rogers Little Theater is bringing it back as part of its silver anniversary season because it was one of the audience requests. And this time is Rick Pearson as Oscar and Jim Olmsted as Phoenix.
Phoenix?
Phoenix? Felix.
Yes.
English. Yeah. We did a fun story because we did sort of an eHarmony thing. Mm-hmm. And ask them the kind of questions in character that Oscar and Felix might answer if they were trying to get a date. So you might enjoy reading that. All you need to know is that it's on stage. It starts with the traditional poker game and ends with the last giggle of the Pigeon Sisters, who, by the way, are played by real-life sisters Casey Cott and Kristen Begnaud. Also funny. 8 o'clock tonight and Saturday. 2 o'clock Sunday. Again next weekend at Rogers Little Theater. $42 with dinner.
Gotcha.
$9.50 for students, $15 for adults in the balcony. 631-8988.
Okay.
And then there's Pretty Things Peep Show.
That's at Smoke and Barrel, on just off Dixon in Fayetteville.
Not even sure how to describe this.
We'll try.
It's burlesque.
Okay. I am interested.
There's a sword swallower.
Oh.
There's a fire eater.
Mm-hmm.
There are women, including the girl who started it, who calls herself Go-Go Amy, who take off a great deal of their clothes in the tradition of Gypsy Rose Lee.
Sure.
And there's a vertically challenged dancer. It should be really interesting.
You know, the burlesque sort of throwback became very popular in New York and Washington, D.C., L.A. a few years ago. There were permanent clubs established where you would go and you would see these acts every night.
And she says that that's what this tour came out of, is taking that to the central parts of the country. She links it to steampunk and to a resurgence in a dandyism kind of thing.
Right.
You know, looking for reality instead of smartphones. It should be an interesting show.
Again, when is it?
It's 10 o'clock Thursday at Smoke and Barrel. It's $10 at the door. And you can go to prettythingsproductions.com and find out more than we told you in print.
Sounds good.
All right. Also this weekend.
Yes.
Here's the Reader's Digest condensed Twitter version. The Sheetford Experience. We are in it together. It's a fundraiser and a play reading to support Artists Laboratory Theater. They're trying to get the money to go to New Orleans Fringe Festival with the Babes, Bombs, and Bingo show that they did last summer. And this is part of their fundraising effort. It's at 8 o'clock today at the studio of Matt Miller at 21 West Mountain. And they've built a huge sheet fort, like we all played in as kids, because they want the intimate experience of you seeing a play reading and feeling like you're part of it and then commenting on it. Should be very interesting. It's $20. ArtLabTheaterRE.com. The Trey McIntyre Project's in town.
Yes. They've been out spontaneously dancing about Fayetteville the
Isn't
past couple
great?
Of nights. Yes.
At Wilson Park and
around the square for First Thursday, some places on campus.
How fun. And they are on stage at the Walton Arts Center at 8 o'clock today. Tickets start at $10.
That's right. Part of the 10 by 10 series.
Also this weekend, the Northwest Arkansas Fantasy Fair. This is the descendant of the Northwest Arkansas Renaissance Festival. But they decided, why limit it to the Renaissance period or the medieval period? Let's have some space aliens and whoever else shows up.
And this is at the fairgrounds?
This is at the fairgrounds. It will feature Mounted Fury, which is an all-female jousting troupe, live-action role players, belly dancers, the Ozark Highlanders Pipe Band, a children's realm, and fairy tales with the queen.
And this is Friday?
This is Saturday and Sunday.
Saturday and Sunday. So you can see the Sword Swallower Thursday night at Smoke and Barrel. Then you can see aliens Friday and Saturday.
Yes, you can see trolls. And we have a lovely picture of a troll. So 10 o'clock to 5 o'clock on Saturday and Sunday at the Washington County Fairgrounds. $5 to get in. And children 12 and younger are free.
You do not have to be in costume to go.
No, but it's more fun.
Oh, sure. But I'm just saying you don't have to.
No, okay. No, you don't have to be.
Okay.
Jim Cosgrove and the Hiccups.
Yes.
Part of the Children's and Family Series at 2 o'clock Saturday at 2nd Street Live in Fort Smith.
Yes.
And it is my favorite word.
free.
782-5483. The Mount Comfort Harvest Festival is this weekend in Fayetteville. Games, a bake sale, a chili cook-off, and a group called Sugar on the Floor performing. It starts at 3 o'clock Saturday afternoon at Mount Comfort Presbyterian Church. Sugar on the Floor performs at 6:30, and that's at... You can find out more at 530-0509. The Kenny Barron Trio is at the Walton Arts Center Saturday night.
Part of the 10x10 series. First time that Kenny Barron and David Sanchez have been together in Northwest Arkansas. Both have performed here often, never together. Now they will.
And you can see them for how much?
Tickets starting at $10.
Yeah.
And there is a pre-show conversation with both David and Kenny Barron.
And did I mention what an amazing place we live in?
You did.
And if you're of a historical bent... The Polenta Smear is
That's
Sunday
right.
at St. Joseph Parish Hall in Tawnytown, a project of the Shiloh Museum and the Tawnytown Historical Museum, looking back at the Italian heritage of Tawnytown. And that's from 1 to 4 o'clock on Sunday, and it, too, is free.
Never a dull moment.
Never, which is why we're both employed.
Hey, that's right, and you'll be back Sunday.
I will.
Becca Bacon-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers. One more entertainment note. Tonight's performance of the Trey McIntyre Project at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville is now sold out. Sunday, you can see the third DVD opera presentation in this year's season from the John Harrison Opera Foundation. It's Sunday afternoon at 2. The opera will be shown in HD in the Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall in the Fine Arts Center on the University of Arkansas campus. Sunday selection, like all of the others this season, will feature Renee Fleming. Yesterday, Rebecca Newth of the John Harrison Opera Foundation came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio to tell us a bit more about Sunday's offering, Rusalka by Dvorak.
We are doing an entire season of Renee Fleming in five languages. And so this one is Rusalka. Renee Fleming turns out to be a very good dramatic actress. And it's very interesting to hear her. Last time she did Streetcar Named Desire.
Which was in English.
Yes. But Rusalka, the word, means water nymph. And the aria that this opera is known for is called Hymn to the Moon. And it's the aria that got my husband to be so crazy about opera. He heard it in Driving Miss Daisy, and that just started him on a whole new life. It's an especially beautiful opera, or aria, obviously, and the text of it sort of means the story of the Little Mermaid.
So this is, wow, so he heard it in...
He heard it at the movies. I didn't hear it. I was sitting right with him. But he heard this in Driving Miss Daisy. And now Driving Miss Daisy is on Broadway. And they still have this same aria in it. Apparently the man who wrote the screenplay and the story on which it was based was also inspired by this aria.
Wow.
So if you really want to be moved, you might want to come and hear this.
This sounds like then the perfect entry level for perhaps someone who has never really been exposed to opera. I mean,
yes.
If it's got an aria so powerful, it changes people's perceptions.
Right.
Yeah.
And even although it's not sung in English, it's just so beautiful.
These are performances that are shown via DVD, but they're HD.
Mm-hmm.
They're in Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall.
Yes.
With the new seats.
Yes, very comfortable.
And how much would I pay to get in?
Free.
At 2 o'clock?
Yes.
And this is the third of, I believe, five or six Renee Flemings.
Yes, the rest of them will be next semester.
Now, when Christopher Lacey's here and he starts talking about Renee Fleming, he starts gushing. And one thing he mentions is she's not just a talented singer, but she is the complete stage presence.
Yes. She is. I didn't realize that. I've seen her myself even at the Metropolitan, but she is a dramatic actress as well, and I was so surprised about that. It's wonderful.
And these are being kind of shown chronologically in her career as well.
Yes.
We see her from
a very
the ingenue
young woman.
Up through.
Yes, yes. A little bit chubbier in the beginning. Now she's so svelte and everything.
All right. 2 o'clock at Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall and absolutely free.
Yes.
Rebecca, thank you very much.
Thank you.
time from Renee Fleming to roller derby. Today, members of the Northwest Arkansas Roller Derby League are on patrol around Fayetteville, handing out free hugs. Today is International Free Hugs Day, at least in Northwest Arkansas and in Manchester, England. The event is inspired by a viral phenomenon of one man offering free hugs to anybody on city streets. Yesterday, a member of the Roller Derby League, who skates under the pseudonym Artemis Prime, came to KUAF to explain the day. She says they began the Free Hugs Day early this morning.
Our first stop is going to be the Veterans Hospital, and we'll be going from floor to floor, room to room, handing out free hugs to whoever wants one.
After that, then there's a preschool?
We're going to community preschool, a place that was really special to my heart. My daughter attended community preschool. Great little place down on Leverett. And handing out some hugs to the preschoolers.
And then you throw it out wide open.
Then we're taking it to the streets, which is pretty much what Juan Mann, the creator of the International Free Hugs campaign, did. He stood out with a sign that's much like the one that I brought today, great big white sign that says free hugs, and sees who wants a hug. You know, some people would pass him by and look at him kind of strange. Other people would run up to him, jump on him, just anything for a hug. You never know who may have experienced a loss in the family. They may have lost their job. They may be here in Northwest Arkansas without any family at all. They may be a student who's feeling lonely. They may be somebody who's feeling sad and depressed. And that hug could make all the difference in the world.
Okay, I don't want to put a dark cloud with a silver lining here. You're women, you're attractive women, you're giving out free hugs. Are you a little bit concerned that somebody might try to hug too much?
We play roller derby. We're pretty tough girls.
Okay.
We just look girly most of the time.
How many free hugs do you think you'll give out?
Oh, Lord. Oh, I hope to give out more free hugs than I can possibly ever imagine. Yeah, as many people as want a free hug.
Going to be on skates?
We're not going to be on skates tomorrow just because of the terrain changes, being up and down stairs and things like that. But we do a lot of outdoor skating for endurance.
And you will be decked out in something that will identify you as Roller Derby League?
We will have our Northwest Arkansas Roller Derby looks on. We're a family-friendly league, mm-hmm. So we'll be family-friendly, not to offend anyone. But absolutely, you'll be able to tell that we are Roller Derby.
You're doing this in conjunction with, as you said, it's International Free Hugs Day, but you're doing it specifically in conjunction with some folks in Manchester.
Manchester, England. My great friend over there, her name is Rachel Mason, and she's a rock star hairstylist. She actually came up with the idea and motivated me, collectively motivated each other to choose a month, a day, and a time. And Rachel is an amazing hairstylist. Her motto, or tagline, we call it, is dare to be different. And I thought, how different does it get to be roller derby?
Now, in derby, when you're competing, you're not handing out hugs. I've seen you guys. It's something other than a hug that takes place.
We are handing out, moving the other team out of the way so that our team can score. And keeping them from scoring. It's much like rugby, hockey, football on skates.
With a good sense of humor about it as well.
A great sense of humor, actually. We all have an alter ego. We don't use our real names.
And you are Artemis Prime.
I'm Artemis Prime. And we have a whole group of ladies and men who have alter egos. It's much easier to move someone out of the way or hit them. And, of course, there are rules. There's no actually fist hitting. It's pretty much like a moving them out of the way. Just so that your jammer can get through and score. And it's just a heck of a lot of fun. You'd be surprised at the women that play. They're professional women, women with children, women who all walks of life. A lot of them, this may be the only thing that they have to look forward to in their week. So it's just a great support system in itself for a sport. It's an incredible sport.
Artemis Prime is a member of the Northwest Arkansas Roller Derby League. Members of the four teams in the league are handing out free hugs today around Fayetteville as part of International Free Hugs Day. The first match of the season, or bout, as they're called in the roller derby world, for the local teams will take place in January. This is Ozarks at Large.
Hung up in Oakland on a Saturday night, Lord, I said I just didn't feel right. Good night, ladies all around, but the right one that found me such a bad night. I didn't feel right.
Goodness! Oh, the left and then the right to the point of the chin, and Murrah's done. Joe Cortez pushes Foreman back.
On this date in 1994, George Foreman became boxing's oldest heavyweight champion at the age of 45 by knocking out Michael Moore in the 10th round of their WB fight in Las Vegas. Foreman was born on January 10, 1949, in Marshall, Texas. He grew up in Houston and learned to box in a U.S. Job Corps camp in Oregon. At the 1968 Olympic Games in Mexico City, he won the gold medal in the heavyweight boxing competition. The 6'3", 218-pound Foreman first captured the professional heavyweight belt by knocking out Joe Frazier in two rounds at Kingston, Jamaica on January 22, 1973. He had won all 40 of his professional bouts, including a sequence of 24 consecutive knockouts, when he fell to Muhammad Ali in eight rounds in the Rumble in the Jungle on October 30, 1974. He retired from the ring in 1977 and became an evangelist. Foreman resumed professional boxing in 1987 at the age of 39 and found immediate success. Evidence later surfaced that Foreman's promoter had paid bribes to the International Boxing Federation in order to manipulate the rankings and permit Foreman a chance at a title. Nevertheless, Foreman did very well when his chance at a title bout came. Despite his age and more than 30 additional pounds, Foreman remained a devastating puncher and captured the IBF and World Boxing Association versions of the World Heavyweight title. In March of 1995, Foreman was stripped of his WBA title for refusing to fight their contender, and he resigned his IBF title in June of 1995 rather than fight a rematch with IBF contender Axel Schultz. In 1997, Foreman retired from boxing again. He was inducted into the International Boxing Hall of Fame in 2003. A colorful personality in the world of boxing, Foreman has had success as a television spokesperson for a number of products, including a home grill that was introduced in 1995 and has earned him more money and maybe more fame than his boxing career. On this date in 1862, Dandridge McRae was promoted to the rank of Brigadier General. McRae went on to command a brigade at the December 7, 1862, Battle of Prairie Grove, and at Helena on July 4, 1863. Following the Battle of Helena, the Confederate commander at Helena accused McRae of misbehavior before the enemy for allegedly failing to make an attack. A court of inquiry disagreed, clearing McRae of all charges. After the war, McRae returned to Searcy and resumed his law practice, which he continued until 1881, when he became Deputy Secretary of State. The town of McRae, Arkansas, located in White County, is named in his honor. Suffragist Susan B. Anthony was fined $100 for attempting to vote in a presidential election on this date in 1872. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Tomorrow night, Kenny Barron will take the stage at Walton Arts Center along with his trio and Grammy Award-winning saxophonist David Sanchez. Kenny Barron is in the American Jazz Hall of Fame. He's been called one of the best pianists in the world by the Los Angeles Times, and he's been nominated for Grammy Awards himself 9 different times. Recently, Robert Ginsberg, host of KUAF's Shades of Jazz program every Friday night, talked with Kenny Barron about his career. Kenny Barron's first appearance on record came on a recording by his big brother Bill, himself a renowned tenor saxophonist.
It's odd because he for a long time he didn't know I was playing. You know, I was taking piano lessons, and then everybody, right? My sister played, but I was very young, and I heard my sister playing some blues changes on the piano, and I went to the piano and played it myself. So I had a fairly good ear. And he came home from his day job and heard me playing these chords, and he had no idea. So we started talking about music, and he was kind of testing my ear and calling out playing different chords on the piano and seeing if I knew them. And I did. So that's how it kind of started. And eventually he got me a job playing with the same band that he was playing with. So that was kind of the beginning.
You went on to work with great jazz musicians. I'm thinking, and if you'll again indulge me, for those listeners who aren't that familiar with your work, you worked with Lou Donaldson, with Roy Haynes, Jimmy Heath, Yusef Lateef, Dizzy Gillespie, Freddie Hubbard, Milt Jackson, Buddy Rich. I could go on and on and on. But early in your career, you worked with James Moody. And I know you recorded with Moody a few years ago in New York in a session that produced two CDs, the most recent of which was just released. There was Moody 4A, and I think Moody 4B just came out recently.
Right. Yeah.
What's it like to have these long-term relationships with such great musicians, and what does that bring to the music?
Well, it's great. I mean, it's great because I've known Moody. Moody's known me since I was, 18 years old. You know, I'm 67 now, so he's known me for a long time. And he's always been the same kind of first person. He's always been a very sweet, sweet person, very encouraging, you know, and encouraged me to write and bring in music. But also he was responsible, for me getting the job with Dizzy, which is a very, very big thing for me. I worked with him when I, first moved to New York. And he went back with Dizzy Gillespie with a small group. And I got married, and one day I was walking down Broadway and ran into him, and he told me, listen, Lalo Schifrin, who was with Dizzy at the time, he said, listen, Lalo is leaving. Would you be interested in the gig with Dizzy? So, I mean, I just got married, wasn't working. So, yes, of course.
Good timing.
Yeah, perfect. So I went there working at Birdland. So I went to Birdland to talk to Dizzy, and he hired me just without hearing me, just on Moody's recommendation, and I was there for four years.
And I know that had a major influence on the rest of your musical life.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Kenny Barron Trio, along with Grammy Award-winning saxophonist David Sanchez, will perform tomorrow night at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. Kenny Barron recently spoke with Robert Ginsberg. Robert is the host of KUAF's Shades of Jazz program, heard tonight and every Friday night from 10 until midnight on KUAF 91.3 FM. That's just about all the time we have for this edition of Ozarks at Large from KUAF 91.3 FM. Local support for Ozarks at Large is provided by the John Harrison Opera Foundation, hosting a DVD screening of Renee Fleming and Dvorak's opera Rusalka Sunday at 2 o'clock in the Stella Boyle Smith Center at the University of Arkansas. JohnHarrisonOperaFoundation.com for more information. And by Theater Squared's 5th Annual Gala for Education. It's Friday, November 19th at Savor Restaurant in Fayetteville. This event will feature fine dining, a wine reception, cabaret performance by Esther Stilwell, and the presentation of the 2010 Arts Advocate Award to Sandy Edwards. Theater2.org or 445-6333 for tickets or for more information. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Huntsville. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget you can hear Weekend Ozarks at Large Sunday morning at 9 on KUAF. Then a full week of brand new episodes of Ozarks at Large Monday through Friday of next week, each day beginning at noon.